Freddy Krueger comes home, Super Mario Brothers gets its first sequel, and Bill Murray rules underground in a movie no one remembers this week on 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010, three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-2010, 30-2010, the presses are awaiting us. We're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 30-2010, your weekly look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago into the past of pop culture with some minor news. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista.
Duchess of Devonshire, Diana Goodman.
It's me, Sarah.
And boy, are the movies somehow terrible this week. I expected a bunch of good horror stuff, but did tease something that was a really huge deal up until the moment it released, and I can't wait to revisit this later on in the 2008 segment. However, one of my favorite video games of all time debuts this week, for real. And I can't wait to talk about that shit. And there's some really interesting television events. Find out by listening to the 1998 segment, because that's what 30-2010 does. We look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago to this week, October 5th through the 11th, 1988, 1998, and 2008. We will figure out what you were watching, reading, playing, listening to, or getting depressed over in the news. That occasionally happens, but not so much this week, I don't think. But stay right there and we'll figure it all out together. Anyway, beginning as we always do in 1988, we're in the week of October 5th through the 11th, so I thought we were going to be at peak Halloween, but I think only in our world now do they release Halloween movies like 8 days before actual Halloween. That is totally happening right now with Netflix and the movie theater.
We got a bunch coming in, not necessarily next week, but then the week after that, it's going to be like all Halloween all the time.
Oh, thank God. Yay. Oh, thank God.
Yeah, but the beginning of October, people starting to get hyped for Halloween, you think like, yeah, now's a good time. No.
I did. I'll put this in the news because I couldn't find a good clip of it. But at least I know why. It was the 26th anniversary of Johnny Carson's Tonight Show this week. And joining him as a special guest on that episode were Gary Shandling, David Letterman, and Jay Leno.
Wow.
The man who was supposed to replace him, the man who was really supposed to replace him, and the man who eventually did replace him.
Wow.
That was... Is that Johnny Carson hedging his bets? I'd like to introduce you to all these guys whose show I will executive produce from the grave.
It's like the dating game.
I was thinking more Thunderdome, man. Just lock him in a room and whoever's left, you get the show.
That is pretty amazing. But of course, I was too young to give an absolute shit about that. You couldn't show me a picture of any of those people and I would have been able to name them right now because, as I said, the most important part of this whole decade right now is in the video games for me. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Do the Mario. the movies of 1988. Did you just fall asleep on the keyboard, Diana, or is that a real thing?
Foreign words are funny.
But it has no other context. I don't have a date or a star or a trailer.
Well, it stars a bunch of Indian people, and it's directed by Meera Nair, and it's a really, really good movie, and it was sort of like a big movie breaking Indian cinema to the Western world a bit, you know, not so much the Bollywood musicals, which, I mean, there's so many, it's hard to get into.
Right.
I know white people who are really into Bollywood musicals. One of them ended up moving to India because he was like, this is what I like now.
Wow.
I found a job. And I'm like, okay, cool. But Salaam Bombay is... not quite a coming-of-age story, but it sort of is about, like, the street kid, and it's really good, and I enjoy Meera Nair's work.
I will allow it.
So, there you go. It won a bunch of stuff at Cannes, and everyone loved it, and it's great.
Okay, is it? It better be better than the Billy Crystal starring Memories of Me, which I'm surprised.
Absolutely,
I'm surprised. I never heard of it. And Alan King, holy shit! This is for
Alan King is his dad, and there's wackiness.
This is a comedy for 90-year-old men. Also starring Joe Beth Williams. This is Memories of Me.
Billy Crystal.
Guess who? Anctuary. Anctuary.
Billy was great.
Alan King.
Maestro. Havana Gila.
How about tequila?
Alan King was wonderful.
Two of America's funniest men.
It's the time.
In a new film directed by Henry Winkler.
Is this good for you?
This is great.
Memories of Me.
You'll love it.
Rated PG-13.
That was members of the unwashed public describing the movie to us in between all that.
A trailer like that where they're interviewing people coming out of the movie, just feel like that's not a good sign.
Right. If I have to, like, if you think General Hayseed is going to convince me to go see a movie, I don't want to know what that Rube thinks. Tell me what Peter Travers thinks of Rolling Stone,
exactly.
Who's constantly on the edge of his seat. No, I've never heard of that. I don't remember living in a time where Alan King was considered one of the most funny people in the universe. I remember him as the holdover guy who was on the Comedy Central roast right before he died. He was always one of the... He spoke at the end. the old guard of the Friars Club. Mm-hmm. That's literally all I know about him. I didn't know he was in anything that I would have seen
that's
other than
more
Murphy
than
Brown.
What I know.
But Henry Winkler made a movie. Now we know, and he has an Emmy. Good for you, Henry. Imagine. From
John... Wait, is that Johnny Carson?
No, it's from Dewey Cox Walk Hard.
Oh, gotcha.
If you imagine John Lennon being in a movie, I just looked. What is this? A documentary?
It's a documentary. It uses a lot of like Yoko's footage, unreleased footage, random footage, and it's very interesting. I mean, we're deep into the lionization of John Lennon that we're like only coming out of now when we find out, oh, he kind of roughed up his first
wife. He was kind of a humongous piece of shit. Yeah. He was a real shithead.
I mean, if you, those very few documentaries that show like, here's where the Beatles came from, a place where all wives were roughed up and everybody was white trash. Not defending it.
George Harrison was pretty above board.
I'm just not saying it's surprising to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are complicated. He wasn't a fucking saint. That's the point. Mm-hmm. But I found this, I mean, I watched it like as a teenager. It's very interesting. I think the most striking scene is this like random street kid like shows up at his house and is obviously like messed up on something. And he's just starts talking about, and when you wrote these words, is that blah, blah, blah. And it was great. And he was like, that was Paul. Paul wrote that song.
You're not going to shoot me, are you?
Exactly. And you think, oh my God, this was the kind of interaction he had all the time with weird people, sort of like maybe a little messed up or not, or just freaking out and just being like, oh my God, I can't believe it's John Lennon. And he just got so used to that one of them can just walk up in front of his apartment and hand him an album and he'll sign it. And then when he comes back later, fucking shoot him because he's an asshole.
I don't know how he lived the way he did because, I mean, shit, I lived in San Francisco for a dozen years and I knew a couple of famous people who lived there. I didn't know where they lived. If you go to New York now, they will point to the building where John Lennon used to live, and it's incredibly accessible to everyone, and he's way more famous than anybody on the planet now. Like, I don't, how did he do that? How the fuck did he... what was his day-to-day life like? It's just insane to think about.
Well, he obviously wasn't successful at it.
All right. Here's a clip from the trailer.
Imagine John Lennon, the angry youth, the musician, the radical, the idealist. Through his own words and private collection of film and music, imagine John Lennon, a motion picture portrait, rated R.
Oh, with a very pleasant music, but don't bring the kids.
Yeah.
Yep. Gotta be some swearing. Yeah.
I bet it's not so much swearing, like all the nude photographs he and Yoko Ono took.
Probably a lot of nudes.
Yeah, just the two versions cover alone, man.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Also out this week, Clara's Heart, starring Whoopi Goldberg, Kathleen Quinlan, and Neil Patrick Harris.
I don't know why I've seen this, but I've seen this like 5 times.
You know my policy, I won't see a movie with the word heart in it, so this movie, pass me by.
Ah, well, you're missing out.
Oh, sweet darling, that's another moo-moo you're talking about.
Can we help it if the child is clever as the devil?
What's wrong with you?
Your own happiness can never be as important as that child's until he grows to be a man.
Stay out of this, Clara.
Then fire me, Mr. Hart.
Let the girl go home.
Whoopi Goldberg, you can depend on me.
She's not fit for the picture.
Clara's Heart.
She's underage. She's not fit for the picture.
Okay.
Huh. Wait, what is it about, though?
I don't know, because that first person with the accent you hear is a very young Neil Patrick Harris doing his best Jamaican accent.
It's about little itty-bitty baby Neil Patrick Harris, and Whoopi Goldberg is his Jamaican nanny, and there's family strife, and Neil Patrick Harris is dealing with stuff, and she's dealing with stuff, and then it takes one of the darkest turns in history.
Ooh, just ruin it, please.
Find out what her problem is in the past. You know, there's some sort of family secret. And it turns out, should I spoil it?
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
I'm not watching this.
It turns out in a very wrenching scene, she describes how her son was mentally ill. And at one point, he raped her.
Holy shit. Yeah. I was braced for pretty much everything. Not that.
Did not see that coming.
Yeah. Then I think he killed himself.
Oh,
and that's
my God.
What's been going on in her life and what she's running away from.
Holy shit. Okay.
Like, did not see that coming. Thank you.
Holy shit. So now we have to bring the mood all back with How am I going to talk about a Mario game in just a couple minutes? Okay, we'll get it back.
Gather yourself.
Hey, we'll you want to talk about maybe metaphors for racism?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to ask you to segue. You promised me Clara's Heart isn't a made-for-TV movie. Not with that ending. Mm. But Alienation, I'm still doing a double take. I'm looking it up as we speak. This was a movie in movie theaters.
Yeah, but then it became a TV show and a series of TV movies.
It became like one of Fox's only consistent things that wasn't The Simpsons or Married with Children. It was always on Fox in some capacity. But it did start as a movie starring Terrence Stamp, Mandy Patinkin, and Jimmy Kahn.
In 1991, they came to Earth. They learned our language.
My true name is Stangia Sorensa. Well, Gesundheit.
Took jobs and tried to fit in.
Tell me the truth. Have you ever made it with one of us?
But there's something about them we don't know. Prepare yourself for Alien Nation. Rated R.
I get it. Alien Nation. Clever title. Clever title. Yeah, I did not know this stuff. With an uncredited rewrite from James Cameron as well. What the hell?
Is Mandy Patinkin an alien in this? Was he?
Oh, yeah, man. I would guess. And like, probably some
what?
Of...
That guy has the weirdest career,
He
I
really does.
Like, I love him. He's one of my favorite actors, but man, is his career bizarre.
Alien, Princess Bride, Yentl.
Broadway star of Evita.
Dick Tracy, whatever.
Homeland, Run, Ronnie, Run.
If you, naked.
Yeah.
If you got a thing, I'll act in it. I just let him do it. I never knew this existed, but I remember like in a world without cable, I would get so excited when Alienation was on Fox, and then it was one of the things I'd try and watch and have to give up for being too stupid.
Mm.
And then later I would find out, no, it's just really cheap and boring. And the aliens, the aliens have a head that looks like kind of like a child's dinosaur egg toy.
Yeah.
Like it's just not, it's like the least convincing alien race since V.
So one of my best friends just had a baby, and she sent me a picture of it when it came out, and it kind of looked like that alien's head.
Ooh,
you know how babies' heads are like super weird when they first
lumpy
come out?
With hair patches.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking like Corey Feldman at the end of Friday the 13th Part 4. That's a quick plug for Elm Street Nightmare. It does return this season with me and Dave talking about Friday the 13th. Get that at patreon.com/lasertime, including maybe a commentary for one of these things we're about to talk about.
Ooh, Alienation is, I mean, it's a pretty solid like a B+ movie.
Hmm.
You know, it doesn't look like crazy expensive, but, you know, it's got the basic metaphor for racism that all these immigrants are coming here taking our gerbs. But, you know, can they be trusted? I think they're up to something. They, like, have their own mafia and stuff, and they can't really be one of us. They'll always look different.
Hmm.
I'm just surprised.
But it's also, it's basically a cop movie, though.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, but the rest of, I don't know, like, it is technically perfect sci-fi. I'm just surprised the premise didn't wear thin over the course of like I think the next 6 years, because it would air intermittently on Fox, like in a TV series and then ongoing TV movies.
I just remember seeing it in the TV listings on Fox. That's the only way I knew about it.
Yeah, me too. Speaking of television, 1988. Mm-hmm. Get ready, people. October 5th through 11th. We have it. Is this the quintessential Dan Quayle clip? From the vice presidential debate. Where he makes a bad comparison. Does this need any more setup, Di?
Nope.
All right.
It is not just age, it's accomplishments, it's experience. I have far more experience than many others that sought the office of vice president of this country. I have as much experience in the Congress as Jack Kennedy did when he sought the presidency. I will be prepared to deal with the people in the Bush administration, if that unfortunate event would ever occur.
Jesus. Senator Benson?
Senator, I served with Jack Kennedy. I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
Damn.
Senator Lloyd Benson fucking clapping back at Dan Quayle.
The kill.
Oh, man.
And and you see the crowd. People are like jumping up and down in their seats. Ooh, like boring old dudes who would show up to a vice presidential debate are seriously turned into amateur night at the Apollo.
Somebody comes out and dances real quick, tries to yank him off stage with a cane.
Yeah, someone comes out with a giant hook.
The giant's going to sweep him off the stage.
This man is sweeping behind me. I don't know what this is. holy shit, man. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I actually did did not know where that quote came from. I'm very familiar with it.
See, that's why I wanted to back up a little bit so you could see the context. And yeah. He'd mentioned Kennedy like a couple times leading up to this where he's talking about, yeah, I might be young. I look like I'm in preschool, but I'm prepared because, you know, just like Jack Kennedy was prepared and no one said he wasn't prepared. And I'm like Jack Kennedy. And then Lloyd Benson, who got into Congress in the 40s, is fucking ready for him. Yeah. And then once the crowd dies down, Quayle is like, that was uncalled for, sir.
Oh, poor Danny. Now I feel bad.
Like, Dan.
He is one of those people I've like, why do I feel bad for him now? Just because, like, dude, that dude disappeared. It's like he's dead.
Yeah.
We have never seen him again since, like, in 20 years.
It's, you know what? Honestly, it's for the best. He's probably living his best life right now on a ranch in Wyoming or something.
Rich forever in those 4 years. He helped mess up the economy. Good for you, Danny. Also, on October 8th in 1988 on television... I don't know why I know about the show at all. Empty Nest debuts?
Yeah, I don't know why I know about this show as well.
I mean, it was one of those things that was pretty ubiquitous because this is like, again, in that much smaller monoculture, this is a sitcom aimed at every member of an American household.
Yes.
Because the dad looked insanely old. Mm-hmm. and I don't know. It had kids in it. I don't know. I don't remember this at all, but it was on all the time, seemingly.
And people reference it a lot. Mm-hmm. So I threw the opening in there because I feel like a lot of times with these older movies or the older TV shows, just the jingle will bring you back to a place.
Show me that smile. No, oh, that's not it. That can't be it.
And so do we. Just how we do it is no mystery. One by one, we fill the day.
Remember, back then your time was not as important.
Yeah, this guy's just running around with a dog, feeding his dog a newspaper.
Change the channel. I dare you. We'll see you in two clicks.
Yeah.
Empty Nest. Well, sorry, Empty Nest fans.
Technically, we're a Golden Girls spinoff here. I believe in canon they live next door to the Golden Girls, and Richard Mulligan's an older dude and his adult daughters move back in with him. Mm.
Well, that's probably why it aired on the same night as the Golden Girls season 4 premiere.
Which
I'm sure this followed right after. Yeah. The Golden Girls was the lead-in.
I mean, I love the Golden Girls. Mm-hmm. I think my millennial lady card would get revoked if I didn't say that at least once. But my favorite thing is that this Golden Girls title of this episode is called Yes, We Have No Havanas, wherein Blanche and Sophia are vying for the affections of a Cuban cigar mogul. But okay, guys, I know that this reference is Yes, We Have No Bananas, but what the fuck does that mean?
Was that a commercial?
I don't know. And the only reason I know Yes, We Have No Bananas is because when I was in elementary school, I sent away for an Archie Comics 1950s themed issue wherein they're all riding around in a convertible yelling out, Yes, We Have No Bananas. And I didn't get it then and I don't get it now.
It's a song.
It's a novelty song, apparently. Okay. I remember it, like a cookie commercial starring a monkey. It might have been for like Fig Newtons, and it was, we don't have banana Newtons yet.
Okay, well, that solves that mystery for me that has been brewing for 20 years.
It's a novelty song. It's. I mean, hey, that's what we exist for, right?
Right.
But very exciting counter programming for me on another channel, of which I cannot tell you because this was in syndication. Mm. But in my world, we just said we started up Elm Street Nightmare again, which we started last year, not to discuss Jason Voorhees like this year, which you can only get on Patreon right now, but to discuss Freddy Krueger, who is huge in my world. And today was the premiere of Freddy's Nightmares, the anthology television show of Freddy Krueger, except this one is the only one I can confirm to you need to watch. Because it was like a Twilight Zone hosted by Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
But the first episode, instead of Rod Serling, Freddy Krueger does all the intros. Mm-hmm. They're hilarious. They're bad. He raps. It's quite wonderful.
It's time for our boy to face the music with Rap Master. Ready.
And that would be how you came back from commercials.
Nice.
It was a wonderful time. However, the first episode, one, it's directed by the legendary Tobe Hooper, who we lost somewhat recently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre fella. And it is the only episode to be about, I'll let him explain.
Snap, No, no, no! Don't be afraid! This time, it isn't one of your nightmares. This one was mine.
So this is, in the Freddy Krueger lore, he is hunting the children of Elm Street in their dreams to exact revenge upon their parents. He was, I think in modern lore, it's pretty clear he was a child molester. In the movies at this point, he was a child murderer who was murdering the children of Elm Street. He got off on a technicality after being arrested, so the townsfolk of Elm Street burned him alive in his own furnace. And that's just the story. And in this episode of Freddy's Nightmares, you actually get to see that happen. It's very cheap looking, looks like it never left the Universal lot, but it is the most lore you'll ever see in Freddy Krueger. Normally it's just told to you in one giant lore dump in the movies, but it's good. It's worth watching if you're a Freddy fan. And if you're a patron, patreon.com/lasertime, we have a video commentary where Lizzie and I walk you through it and tell you all the personal stuff, so you don't even have to buy it.
I was thinking like Freddy Krueger's worst nightmare is like happy children having a wonderful day.
Yes.
I was fully.
He's got to be a state mandated 500 feet away.
Yeah. I was kind of more expecting the classic, you're naked and trying to find your high school locker. And
I haven't showed up to graphic arts all year.
You have a dance recital and you don't know any of the steps. Might be getting too personal here.
Yes. Tap, tap, turn, bitch.
My God, you sound like my dance instructor.
But yeah, I love those movies, and you can check those out on Elm Street Nightmare. But please do, for the price of a cup of coffee, enjoy 10-episode new season starring Jason Voorhees with our buddy Dave. You might remember from this show, helping us out there. But also the next day on October 9th, ABC had a TV movie.
As promised, our second Liberace movie in 2 weeks. This one starring Victor Garber, Saul Rubinek, Michael Dolan and Maureen Stapleton. And I'm a little more partial to this one just because I love Victor Garber.
Who's Victor Garber?
Oh, he's in like everything, basically.
He was the dad on Alias. He was the architect on the Titanic.
Yep.
Okay.
He was, wasn't he a butler in something? Or possibly Mr. Deeds? Why do I want to say that?
That was John Turturro.
Okay. Not that.
You want some Cocoa Pebbles?
It's a Hey, It's That Guy. You saw him and you're like, oh yeah.
He's totally a Hey, It's That Guy.
We'll see. I'm going to watch this promo right now.
Behind the glamour.
Would you mind if I go out and slip into something a little more spectacular?
He hid the loneliness.
What is the secret of life?
It's the first time for everything.
And the pain. Behind the public adoration, the cravings of a young musician.
Are you dedicated to music or to success?
I can't shoot for both.
Encore!
Holy shit, of course I recognize this guy. God damn it, I just can't pinpoint anything he's from.
In basically everything, like I said.
Yeah, everything you said, and oh man.
Kind of like a stuffy guy, basically, in most stuff.
He looks very American aristocratic.
I'm curious how this was for him, because he's gay, but I don't know if he was out then.
Oh, I didn't know he was gay. Or he is gay.
I believe so.
Oh, well, there you go. But yeah, I mean, normally... I feel like we wouldn't pay this much attention to two TV movies, but it's just kind of bizarre to me, again, that we had two TV movies about Liberace, one following the other in 2 weeks, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's that type of thing someone would sue over it in this day and age.
It's bizarre.
Because you have to pay. Somebody had to have been paid to use Liberace's music or likeness, and it seems bizarre.
Well, no, I mean, the music is classical music. You just re-record it.
No shit. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's not like he wrote songs.
I didn't know this. I'm still learning about Liberace. I should have watched these movies, God damn it.
He might have had some songs that, you know, he wrote or he popularized. You can't use his recording, but you can re-record them.
You know, I've only seen Behind the Candelabra, and I was mainly distracted by the amazing face work being done in that movie. Just the bad plastic surgery.
The makeup was amazing. Astounding.
Yeah. I think it was actually nominated for Best Makeup that year.
Because I hope so, because they managed to make people look like they had bad facelifts.
Oh, yeah.
And Rob Lowe looked terrifying.
Oh, Rob Lowe.
Oh, my God, that's right.
That's right. I forgot he was in that.
Okay. All right, clear out, ladies. Time to talk some games.
Sorry.
briefly, I'll mention... Ultima 5 Warriors of Destiny is out this week. Didn't play that. I did play the home conversion of 1943, Battle for Midway, or Battle of Midway. I can't remember, but one of my favorite Capcom World War II flight combat games. Yes, you're an American. I don't know why a Japanese company would make this. But the home conversion was a little more straightforward, a little easier, and you could upgrade your abilities, which you could not do in the arcades. A valiant port. But the biggest news of the week on October 9th, 1988, America got its first ever Super Mario Brothers sequel.
Super Mario is back. He's blasting through worlds where no one has ever been. He's taking on enemies no one else dares. This time, Mario plucks up power wherever he goes, so he's bigger and badder than ever before. You've never seen creatures like these. You've never had an adventure like this. It's everything you dreamed of and worlds more. It's Super Mario 2, only from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power.
I gotta ask, how familiar are you with the saga of Super Mario 2, ladies?
I am, I believe. Are we talking Doki Doki Panic?
Oh, Diana, it's probably the most...
Yeah!
It's the most, like, hack bit of trivia ever. No, not saying... I'm surprised you knew it still. But just that you knew the name specifically. Doki Doki Panic.
Yeah.
And Doki Doki Panic was, like, if you can think of Nintendo as a much smaller company, they're making a splash in Japan, for sure, but kind of just getting started in America. They have one or two big phenomenons. And there, every year there's like this Fuji TV convention, and they asked Nintendo, hey, could you make a character with the mascots of these conventions, mm-hmm. which were all themed after like Arab. That's why Toad, if you look at Toad in the game, they swapped in Toad for the guy wearing a giant turban.
Okay.
But Nintendo made this damn good game. And at the same time in Japan, they'd also released Super Mario Brothers 2, which looks exactly like Super Mario Brothers 1
mm-hmm.
and is hard as fuck. It has power-ups that actually hurt you. It's really, really mean and difficult. And they decided at some point to not bring that over to the States because it was for like one type of player, not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Just the hardcore, I want to master Mario, whereas like, I think I played Super Mario Brothers for like 3 years and never beat it, never got mad, didn't bother me. Like, I was just having fun with the game. It was a fun game. So this game was a little easier, so they adapted Mario characters into it. But I want to make a little thing celebrating how important this is, because it ends up defining a billion things about Mario. Even though people... This is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the Mario family, because everyone loves Super Mario 3. I love this game even more than that. I thought it was amazing.
I do too, actually.
Yeah, so colorful.
I love this game.
It's so pretty, and it invented pickups. It invented the physical attributes for people like Luigi and Princess, her ability to hover, his ability to do twinkle toes. It all starts here, and it was just this weird adaptation Nintendo did to double up on its efforts. Like, I still can't believe a company could come to Nintendo and be like, make a game for us. They're clearly not that company anymore. But Super Mario 2 was eventually popular enough, it got brought over to Japan as Super Mario USA. But if you ever wondered where like Shy Guys or Birdo came from, they all come from this game that technically didn't start out life as a Mario game. It started out as a promotional thing you got at a Japanese TV convention.
Wow.
But it releases over here, and it's just like, I think if we haven't said that before, there was no Nintendo launch blitz in America. It was fucking regional. It like came out in New York, and then like a few weeks later, it came out in Chicago, and you might have seen commercials in your local territory. This was just like, new Mario! And like it launched with Nintendo Power. It's its first cover, its mm-hmm. first issue. That magazine would run for another 20 years. But that's kicked off with Mario 2.
I love that ad. They have your deepest fantasies. All your dreams are realized. You can die happy now.
Well, it's just, taken as a whole, those first three Mario games are just phenomenal. They're all different enough to be thoroughly enjoyed. One's in the Mushroom Kingdom. One, you travel to ice worlds and desert levels where you can dig. And then the third one is just this batshit play that they put on. Don't let me get started on that, how Mario 3 is a play. Look it up, people. It's really fun. There aren't levels. You can see little bolts and things hanging from the ceiling. It opens with a curtain call.
Oh, wow.
Mario 3 is a play. It's very interesting.
That's
fun. And sort of like during this era when you get a direct sequel, it would be nothing like the original, because I think Nintendo's had sent out some kind of APB. Like, we can't. That's what killed Atari. We can't have easily recognizable sequels. Like, mm-hmm. it shouldn't look that much like the first. And this looks nothing like the first, with an addition of two more players. I don't know. I think it's just astonishing. I fucking love this game. It went on to sell a ton. If you were born in between, I would say, 1982 and 1994, you had this game somewhere. Anyway, I'll let it go. That's Super Mario 2. I fucking love the game. And hopefully I will have some way to celebrate that When we get close to the anniversary. So lasertimepodcast.com, follow us on Twitter or Facebook. You know what to do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that is it for the games. How about some music of 1988, October 5th through the 11th? New releases, and that includes Sarah McLachlan's debut, Touch. How many songs do you think made me cry about homeless dogs were on that album?
Well, yeah, that's kind of her deal.
Barcelona by Freddie Mercury and the opera soprano Monistat 7? No. Montserrat Caballé. Did I say that right?
Correct. Yeah.
I'm really good. So I get paid the big bucks. By that I mean barely any bucks. Introspective by Pet Shop Boys. I got to say this, Land of Rape and Honey by Ministry. Oh. Thanks, Ministry. And Rattle and Hum by U2. Did they have a movie accompanying that?
Mm-hmm. We got the movie coming out in a little while. And it's not number one this week, but number one next week. I cannot believe the synergy on this. I have to say it now, because on Monday, all of a sudden we heard about Supreme Court nominee Kavanaugh getting into a fight after a UB40 concert, and they're going to be number one next week.
Oh, okay.
And it kills me as I'm like prepping the shows and stuff to see, what the fuck? Why UB40? Why now?
Seems like a very... chill atmosphere. I don't know why I would be fighting after that.
Yeah.
Because he was a drunken dick.
Oh, right.
Wow.
He's probably mad that UB40 knocked this song by Def Leppard off the number one spot.
That's right. I think the song's too edgy for us to close out with. Love Bites? Man, ooh. That's raw. I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, but... pick something from Land of Rape and Honey instead.
Oh, thank you. We'll close out with Love Bites by Def Leppard, because it is number one. We will see you once again in 1998. Stay right there, everyone. Today's episode of 30-20-10 is brought to you by TiVo. Yes, TiVo. Those guys. And T3 listeners can save 20% on a TiVo Bolt by going to TiVo.com/T320 and entering promo code T320. Because, you know, I did something adult a year or so ago that I'm incredibly proud of. I bought all my home media equipment, my modem, my DVR, etc. Are you still renting a cable box from your cable company? Man, you are getting suckered. In my case, the product I was renting was pretty shoddy and inferior to something like a TiVo box. And buying your own DVR will save you hundreds of dollars in the long run over renting one. And for cable subscribers, the TV Box Volt offers a complete home TV experience. A live TV, a DVR, a streaming video device that has all your favorite apps on it, and it allows you to access everything you love on any screen you like. You can also search with voice commands, and the TiVo Volt is Alexa compatible, but of course it's TiVo. One of the biggest draws will always be skipping over entire commercial breaks. Yeah, TiVo is celebrating its 20th anniversary with one of its coolest products to date, the TiVo Volt, and in two distinct flavors. We got cable, there's a TiVo Bolt Vox. But I know what you cord cutters are saying, I don't have cable. Hey, me neither. That's why they've created the TiVo Bolt OTA, or over the air. People who don't have cable should know by now that an HD antenna can usually get you at least a dozen or so channels free over the air. All the big networks, PBS, and in San Francisco, we got over 60 channels. You can get a better experience with TiVo, no cable required. Not only does the TiVo Bolt OTA give you a high quality little streamy box that houses your Netflixes, Hulus, and Amazon Primeses, it can also record live sports, late night talk shows, or dare I say, the return of Tim Allen's Last Man Standing. But whatever it is, TiVo will let you watch it on any screen you want. And yes, both models, the TiVo Bolt Vox or the TiVo Bolt OTA, offer 4K and HDR support. So come on, are you ready for a better way to watch? Good news, people. TiVo has put together a great deal for our listeners. 20% off any TiVo Bolt OTA or TiVo Bolt Vox. Just head to TiVo.com/T320 and enter promo code T320 at checkout. That's T3 like the show and 20% like what you're saving. So once again, that URL is TiVo.com/T320 and use promo code at checkout T320 for 20% off. Man, look at the sky. Oh, stars, man. Stars are beautiful tonight. Look at the girl, superstar. Star. That is what you are. Coming from afar. Reaching for the stars. Run away with me to another place. Rely on each other. Yeah. For one corner.
Some got hopes and dreams, we got ways and means. The supreme dream team always up with a scheme. From hubcap to selling raps, name your theme. I'ma rise to the top, floating on the screen. Who the hell wanna stop me? I hated those who got me. A million refugees.
What's happening here? We're coming in with Praz featuring Mayan, Old Dirty, Big Baby Jesus with Ghetto Superstar from the Bullworth soundtrack. But we're months off of Bullworth, aren't we?
I know, but yeah. Now it's on Praz's album, which is also called Ghetto Superstar.
Okay, well, whatever. I love the song.
This song's still a banger.
Happy to hear about it. We are 1998 people, if Praz was talking about Praz wasn't clear, because I do not know another song by him after this. We are in October 5th through the 11th. These are the music new releases, because we got The Recipe by Mac 10, the self-titled debut of Queens of the Stone Age, Prolonging the Magic by Cake, John Mellencamp by I Have No Idea. That's his 15th studio album, by the way. Hello Rockview by Less Than Jake. Heaven's Movie by Busy Bone. God Damn It, the debut of the Alkaline Trio. Cypress Hills 4, Squirrel Nut Zippers, Christmas Caravan, and Against by Sepultura. And Nuclear Sounds by Ash. The First Night by Monica is still number one. I am surprised by how many albums I own in that collection.
Yeah.
Little pop punk for Chris.
Prolonging the Magic, still really good.
I like Hello Rockview quite a bit. Gainesville's own Less Than Jake.
That's right.
And Alkaline Trio is just, I don't hear people say Alkaline Trio is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
there.
Agreed.
There.
Agreed.
we're in 1998, once again, October 5th through the 11th. And a tiny little bit of news, and this sent me into a spiral. Diana has it listed in the news.
It's a big deal.
It's an insane deal, but it just shows you like how behind the times the Recording Industry Association of America would be.
Mm-hmm.
The RIAA sues to stop the release of the Rio MP3 player, arguing it's a piracy device. The lawsuit is eventually thrown out, but I mean, to my knowledge, this hurt them quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
They had to spend months in court over this.
Yeah,
I still remember
this became a thing. I mean, think about that. We're 2 years off of like the Napster lawsuit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we're 3 years off of iTunes, which I just assumed was around already, and the iPod was here, but I guess it wasn't.
No, we had
in 98, you know, that is we start to see the rollout of the MP3 player, because like in the US we had tapes, we had CDs. We never caught on with mini discs. Mini discs caught on other places where it's a compacter musical format. You fit more stuff on a much smaller device. Now you go to MP3 where it's like there's not really even a device. It's storage space.
Right. Mm-hmm. And looking into this device, it's just fascinating how close we are to the iPod. But it's powered by one AA battery, and you can listen to 30 minutes of music, baby. 30 whole minutes of music on your 32 megabyte hard drive, which is upgradable. And this terrified the RIAA. The ability to rip in your own music and put it on your own device with the wire? How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
But like Rio had created its own music store with agreements from record companies. They were the first, or one of the first anyway, to create a digital music store. But this, I don't know, the world wasn't ready for the concept, or maybe Apple just refined it to such a degree.
Yeah.
No, I think the world was ready for the concept. The industry wasn't ready for the concept.
Yeah, that's true.
They had no idea how, when you copy something and there is no loss whatsoever and all your information, you know, the title, whatever, everything pulls over. And it's not like when you do a mixtape off of a mixtape and it starts to get lossy and like you clip off the end and whatever. It's always a perfect copy. And then you can put it on the internet and someone can download it in about a year.
Because it was the Rio and just the MP3 format.
Mm-hmm. Which it's the MP3 format. That's what they're freaking out about.
Yeah, because before that, we've had Waves forever, but they were too big to put on any device you could carry around with you. You would have to carry around essentially like a desktop computer or something the size of a laptop to listen to 5 albums. But the MP3 technology really like fucked up the entire recording industry forever. And this is them throwing a fucking tantrum in a way that every time I look at music, like, good luck out there, musicians, because this sucks for you. This sucks for you.
Oh, my God. I look at it every single week when I look at, okay, so what was the number one song or what album came out? And if I'm looking at 1988, the number one album, it moved 100,000 copies. Mm. And when I look in 2008, it moved 18,000 copies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Man, and I don't know this for a fact, but it felt like at the time, if the people like the RIAA could just catch up to technology and convenience, then we'd still have a better music industry. But it did feel like it took about five years before them to catch on to digital music and downloading.
Well, I mean, I feel like this really started a freight train that like really hasn't slowed down. I feel like we're always hearing more about like artists who have enough money behind them to have any pull, pulling their stuff off of iTunes, putting it on this, taking it off Spotify, putting it on this. Mm-hmm. Tidal is a thing. Like, it just...
Stop it, Tidal. Don't make me go there to see Lemonade.
Yeah. So, and I mean, like, I feel like I can't certainly I can't catch up. And it makes me almost a little nostalgic for mixed CDs because...
It's
a fun time.
You're nostalgic for mixed CDs.
Yes, that's right.
You sweet little baby.
Do you remember how much effort you would put into those things? Like, you know, like in some of those cases, like I just have to sit there and wait for a file to transcode or a 1-1 timing. Like, mm-hmm. I care this much about this person. I'm taking an hour to tailor something to their experience.
And then sometimes it just wouldn't burn.
Yeah, yeah. So fuck up. You have to listen to it. Why is there a Limp Bizkit song in here? Especially that one. No one knows that one. Fuck.
Well, for me, it was probably from the Mission Impossible soundtrack.
Yeah, Weird Al did not write this many songs about weed. And Napster is wrong. Napster is wrong.
Goddamn Napster.
But that's 1998. I mean, in a weirdo technological nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The movies of 1998, Ants is still number one at the box office. I feel like our community had kind of an Ants Defense Force thing going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of chatter about Ants.
Don't feel like I was shitting on Ants too much, and I can totally understand how that would be a super important movie to you if you were younger, the same way I still fucking talk about American Tail and that Little Mermaid Japanese movie where the girl's topless the whole time. But they're not objectively
great.
You
do talk about that a lot.
My sister just brought it over. I can't wait to watch it again.
Oh, boy.
What? I thought it was from a European thing. It's a Japanese thing, so it's gorgeous. Anyway, that's number one at the box office. Ants. But other movies. Slam. Saul Williams. Bones Malone. And Sonya Sutton. What is this time?
This whole week is just... It's kind of a dumping ground. I mean, we've got one okay movie. I've heard this is pretty good. It's well regarded. It's about a guy who's been in trouble with the law, and then poetry slams and he expresses himself. And that's great. And I guess I'd watch it if it were on, but I don't feel the need to seek it out. I don't know. If you've seen it, please tell me I'm wrong.
Words make sense out of a world that won't.
I'm scared every day, but I'm not afraid. To me, there's a difference.
I'm just out there surviving. What can I do?
If you keep shoving the anger and the pain and the frustration, you don't let it come out, that keeps pushing you down. That is your prison.
Yo, son, as in so lost, simply because we are, we be the rising stars and suns that never set word up, Jack.
Okay, I totally saw this, by the way. I definitely saw it. Yeah, it was on one of the movies, the HBOs, the Cinemaxes, the Showtimes, quite frequently.
I was so into Deaf Poetry Slam. Is that the name of it? The HBO show?
Yeah. I am a white guy. I might as well come out and say it.
But now, and I love it, and I still think that it's like an important movement that happened and probably still continues to happen. But the minute I start to hear that slam poetry cadence, I immediately start to cringe a little bit. It's like, it's just a little too much
Incarceration Nation. Sometimes I wish I was Asian. What? I'm good at this. I'm good at this. This is my tryout. This is my ticket out of here.
You've got the tired sound of being a podcaster. Of it. You've got the sound of it down. Just the word part you may need to work on.
But also out this week, holy shit. Is this what I think it is? Is this a parody film? Right on time.
Yes and no. It is both a parody film and a Kevin MacDonald vehicle.
This is crazy, and that's the only reason I know about it. Because, I mean, if you're a comedy nerd, the cast is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Rodney Dangerfield and Dom DeLuise in The Godson.
Don Calzone is finally ready to retire.
Come on, speak up.
That's better. But his hand-picked successor is no longer available.
Son.
Now it's all up to Giuseppe Calzone.
But you can call me Guppy.
Guppy?
Guppy.
Guppy.
Please, son.
How long you been out of the water?
I'm going to kiss you, Elaine.
He's a playboy.
Don't you ever knock.
A cowboy. A fashion statement.
I just got an idea.
He must learn to be ruthless.
Don't just give it a light tug. You've got to really pull.
And get up to speed fast.
Put away the piece before you break a nail.
Jesus. I know this is going to be bad, but I'm going to go watch this tonight.
Yeah.
Because Kevin McDonald is kind of one of my favorite comedy personas in the universe. And he never got...
I love Kevin McDonald. So yeah, good. He never really got his own vehicle, but this looks really bad. I mean, let's just compare this to The Wrong Guy. If we want to do Kids in the Hall vehicles.
Good.
We had The Wrong Guy, what, not even a year ago? And that was fucking great. And it was a parody and it was high concept. This just looks stupid.
And I'm a Brain Candy defender, and he did get to be the star of that movie, essentially. But I would have liked to see more Kevin McDonald stuff. I really would have. I love that guy so much. Mm. And even when I was doing that live Talking Simpsons a few months ago, I'm like, we just walk in the dressing room, and like he walks out, and I'm like, ah! And he's like, oh, hi, sorry. Good luck with everything. Aww. Like, your show and your career is like,
so nice.
Did one of my heroes just say that unprovoked? Like, just good luck with your life and everything? Oh, Kevin McDonald.
Yeah, he blessed
rules.
You.
Kevin McDonald rules. Watch some Kids in the Hall, man. He might secretly be the best kid, I think. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. But The Godson, not so much. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Why now?
I don't know.
Why now?
It's one of those movies, like, this cast, I love these three guys. Could I just watch them have, like, a nice evening together? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, having some drinks.
Just record a podcast.
You know, I mean, Dangerfield's there, so smoke some weed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to hang out with them. I don't want to watch this damn movie.
That would be, but I guess, I don't know, is this like peak mafia parody territory? Because I was going to say Kelly Macon, because he was a Kids in the Hall director and he made National Lampoon Senior Trip, which Kevin McDonald is the only kid in. But then he would go on to make Mickey Blue Eyes, wonderfully regarded Mickey Blue Eyes.
Man, I saw, we can talk about Mickey Blue Eyes
in a year
when it comes up, but man, there are certain, that movie's horrible, and there are certain lines that, from it that I say to myself once a week.
Forget the bow, dude.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, my ex, that was her favorite movie. No shit. Mickey Blue Eyes. I've seen it a lot now.
Oh, yeah, true.
And yes, as we twirl around more Dominion of Crap, Stephen Baldwin is starring in a film with Chris Penn and Gina Gershon. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, okay. This is an interesting time capsule. No, I'll explain why in a second.
Okay.
In the summer of 1981, New York City was witness to a heinous crime.
They caught crucifixes all over her body. We counted over 40 of them.
What kind of an animal would do this?
And Officer Bo Deedle was embroiled in a controversy.
It's a sad day when you feds got nothing better to do than frame good cops.
To protect his partner, to bring a criminal to justice. Oh! He'd go to any length. Some say he went too far.
What's the difference? We kill him, but you do it.
Can we file this in unwatchable in 2018 movie?
Yeah. So did anyone's ears pick up at Bo Deedle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bo Deedle does not look like Stephen Baldwin. He looks like a human testicle. And he's run for, I think, mayor of New York City. And he's on Fox News all the time. He's got a real thick he's got sort of a Queensy Bronxy accent. And he's always talking about, look, with all the things that they're doing, you know, the Democrats trying to kill everybody.
We got to clean up the garbage.
I mean, honestly, Chris Penn is right there. Chris Penn looks more like him. Mm. I miss Chris Penn. He's a very talented man.
R.I.P., buddy.
The rest of the trailer, even the beginning of the trailer, is so portentous. Like, this is the most important film.
Yeah.
Once in a generation, you will see a film like One Tough Cop. And it's like, this looks like a standard asshole cop gets things done movie.
Well, has to commit vigilante justice to defend his partner.
Well, and to avenge that poor nun who had 40 crucifixes carved into her body.
Yeah.
That's why they don't give superheroes guns usually. One tough cop, everyone. One tough cop. Also, man, okay, so the only reason I remember reading about this movie a bunch in a much smaller world, it was in like an Entertainment Weekly article titled, "Is Sharon Stone Really a Movie Star?" And because this movie was like sitting on the shelf for a really long time, and I just never read something like this before. I was a little young that Sharon Stone seemingly was the hottest actress in town, but like no movie she was in other than Basic Instinct made any money. But she was toplining all these films. Mm-hmm. And this was supposed to be the big one. It was based on the book Freak the Mighty.
Okay.
And it just sat on the shelf for, I think, upwards of 2 years. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that. But this is Kieran Culkin, Eldon Henson, Harry Dean Stanton, Gina Rowlands, Gillian Anderson, James Gandolfini, and Sharon Stone in The Mighty.
My son, Kevin, lives in this world of books and ideas, but Kevin would trade it all for a chance to be normal.
Hey, check out the March of Dimes.
I don't have no friends, and I don't need no friends.
Think of it as a partnership. You need a brain, and I need legs. And the Wizard of Oz doesn't live in South Cincinnati.
Sharon Stone gives an Oscar-worthy performance in a beautiful and touching film that will steal your heart. When two outcasts unite as one in a powerful friendship that no one can destroy.
Dragons we slain, rescue many mortals from.
Nominated for 2 Golden Globe Awards, including Best Supporting Actress, Sharon Stone, also starring Gina Rowlands, Gillian Anderson, Kieran Culkin, and directed by Peter Chesum. The Mighty.
Wait, who wrote that song for it? Oh, okay.
It sounds like Sting.
It does sound like Sting.
Freak the Mighty.
Oh, man. That looks...
cheesiest this looks. It's got a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really? Yeah, I think the reviews on it are just like, I don't know, kind of the same thing I saw in Pay It Forward. Like, if you can get over how fucking corny and what pap this is, it's quite enjoyable. But a lot of slow motion shots of people throwing their arms in the air to fireworks in slow motion.
Isn't this just the plot of My Bodyguard?
Oh, I love My Bodyguard. Oh, God, I love that film.
Kind of, but yeah, and this time the bodyguard is little tiny Eldon Hansen, who's now Foggy on all those Daredevil shows.
Oh, shit, fresh off the Mighty Ducks films?
Yep. That's where I recognized him from. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, looking real bullyish. Goddamn, forgot how he...
Yeah, it took me a while. It's like, why do I know him? Why do I know him?
Yeah, I grew up with that guy thinking like, man, that dude could kick my ass. Right. And I see him in Daredevil, I'm like, wow, I can take him now. This is great. This is great.
He also has like a forever young face.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And also out this week, probably.
Fuck me. I saw so many ads for this movie. I'm furious.
Yeah. I remember this movie as, can Eddie Murphy do any wrong? Turns out he can't.
Yeah.
One of his least successful movies to date. Also starring Jeff Goldblum, Kelly Preston, Morgan Fairchild, and patron saint of laser time, Robert Loggia. Holy man.
Try this. It's very refreshing. Homemade. With a peach. Mostly my urine.
It's a joke. It's herbal tea. Psych your mind.
Meet God's gift.
What if you went on my network?
You want me to sell things for you on television?
Amen. To home shopping.
It's the G-Spot, a higher state of consciousness and non-stop shopping. Showtime.
Touchstone Pictures presents...
I know just what they want.
He gave him the chainsaw.
Eddie Murphy.
New Instatuck, the non-surgical do-it-yourself facial toner.
You know, this looks a lot like a battery.
Well, it does, but don't do that. Don't do that. You're hired now. Don't do that.
Mayday, mayday.
May I see the remote control unit?
Oh, don't hand your life over to him.
Surprise!
He's electrocuting Morgan Fairchild.
Holy man.
Let her go, let her go.
Holy man, holy man.
That, okay, it is the electrocuting Morgan Fairchild.
Yes.
I'm glad you got to that part because that was burned into my memory. Mm. Every time I had to see that commercial, it's like, oh God, Morgan Fairchild's terrifying face is going to spread out and morph and bad CG is going to happen.
Well, it's cool because... Antista just paused it right on that face, so now I'll be having nightmares about that tonight.
Yeah, I think there's like... Now it just looks like several Instagram celebrities.
True.
At this point. But I... Yeah, Psych Your Mind. I don't... Why was I so influenced by this marketing, too? I saw way too many commercials for this thing, and it did not do well. Eddie Murphy as a kung fu-esque guru wandering the world that Jeff Goldblum finds and tries to put him on a home shopping network. Yeah, not good. Not good at all. It's no Bowfinger. I'll say that much, which I love. Yes, I'm the guy who loves Bowfinger. But that's Holy Man. I don't know if that'd be number one because I think that was like this is even for a comedy was a pretty big financial disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, because I want to move into television real quick.
Ooh, speaking of disasters,
yeah,
yay.
Yeah, notorious disaster on October 5th for the UPN network. you know, they were trying to make their bones be an edgy network. And they sort of got their wish in a show that starred Max Baker, Christine Estabrook, Dan Florek, and Chi McBride, the only name I recognize from that troupe,
mm-hmm.
The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer.
The Civil War defined America, both the good and the bad. It was the crossroads of our being, and it was a hell of a crossroads. Who would have thought there was a comedy in all that? Well, we did. We were fortunate to acquire an extraordinary historical document. The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer, the P isn't silent, chronicles the life and times of a member of President Lincoln's staff at the height of the Civil War. Pfeiffer, an English nobleman, claimed that he and his trusted manservant were forced by rival noblemen to flee to America due to a dispute over the Queen. All five of them. The rest, as they say, is history. Everything that follows actually happened. You can't prove that it didn't.
I mean, sort of. There are two episodes you can ever see of this show. It is mm-hmm. all gone. It is all gone. And I can't say that for a lot of shows this notorious during this period, this period in television.
I don't know what they were thinking.
I
Homeboys in Outer Space makes more sense than this.
Yeah, but this is the network that made Homeboys in Outer Space. So I think they were throwing kind of anything at the wall. I think they, if I'm... Maybe giving them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they were trying to make the most interesting show they could with a black lead. With a black lead that also starts Abraham Lincoln. But the NAACP didn't like the concept from the description at all.
Yeah,
yeah, you're kind of really playing with fire when you have something about black characters that takes place in the 1860s.
Yeah,
you're just asking for trouble, especially if you're going to be making jokes about
it. Yeah, making a comedy about it.
Like, best case scenario, you have kind of a Benson thing on your hands. That's probably what they were thinking they were doing. But no. Please, no. No.
So said the public.
I think we all collectively said please no to this.
Yes. And it was canceled abruptly. I think only aired 4 of its 9 episodes. And some of which you can track down. There's an article on Film Threat that, like, I get why people had problems with this. But, like, this was a show... That was incredibly filthy. Like, that was what they were hanging their hat on. Because I think it was the second episode. First episode, Lincoln engages in telegraph sex with a woman he's never seen. So, like, beyond its racial issues, this show is going to push buttons, it looks like. This next episode, literally. Lincoln dresses in drag to escape General Grant or some shit like that. Like,
oh, my God.
To try and make a historical comedy with a married with children tongue. And I don't know. I'm not going to defend the show. I never got to watch it. It's most famous for people like me for being referenced in Clerks, the Clerks cartoon, which if you're still watching in 2018, yeah, they mentioned it numerous times. But yeah, that was a pretty notorious. If you were alive, you definitely remember The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer. Mm-hmm. Forgot about that point.
But the next night we had a premiere of a show called Mercy Point. The only name I actually recognize from it is Joe Morton. If you looked him up, he's in
T2.
Yeah, he's in everything.
Don't get dead, Jack, from
but
Speed.
I want someone to have watched this and then come into the comments and tell me about it because it sounds like pretty interesting. Basically, it's about a space hospital. In the 23rd century.
Bad title.
Hospital Space Station, located in deep space, and it focuses on the doctors and nurses there, and there's aliens and humans and robots.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
ER meets Star Trek?
I'm on board for this.
Me too. That's what I'm saying. I hope someone watched this. Come into the comments. Tell us if it's good or not, because I'm intrigued.
It's like an entire show out of a Rick and Morty Shrimply Pebbles penis replacement episode.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
I hope it was. this is much more fondly remembered. Mm-hmm. Is this also UPN on October 7th? Or WB, I can't remember.
I can never keep them straight.
I think the reboot is just getting started.
It is.
We have Charmed. It debuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
Charmed.
Very 98 sort of opening here. Yeah.
Yes. Was this debut with Alyssa Milano? I'm trying to remember it with the cast that it debuted with. When did Brenda come on the show? Or did she leave the show immediately?
Oh, I thought she came on later. I thought it was always originally.
See, I thought she pissed people off and was asked to leave early.
Oh.
I cannot remember.
Janet Doherty?
Janet Doherty, that's who I'm looking for. Because this was like, this is like, I don't know, this is like the Avengers of like TV ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Rose McGowan, Alyssa Milano, and Shannon Doherty. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And my buddy, who you've heard on our arcade episode, Melendez, he was addicted to this show.
He loved
he
it.
He watched it every damn day when it went to reruns. I have never seen an episode of it, though. Nor have I seen Dawson's Creek in its season 2 premiere.
Okay, yes. Shannon Doherty was in first. She was seasons 1 through 3. And then when she left, then Rose McGowan came in.
Okay.
I think I will go back and visit Charmed just because I love witches.
Witches, baby.
I love witches. Mm-hmm. And so this is one that escaped me. I just wasn't into it at that point. But I'm definitely going to revisit.
It's Practical Magic, the teenage years.
Yeah. Yes. Which,
you know what? That's out next week.
I know. I was about to say.
What
Don't
the
even
hell
get
is going
started.
On? Were people just cribbing each other's notes or what?
Yeah.
Women need Halloween movies too.
Oh, we'll be talking about Practical Magic.
More witches,
Don't
baby.
Don't you worry.
Anything to say about Dawson's Creek season 2? I know nothing.
I've never watched Dawson's Creek. I think this is like the aftermath of A Big Kiss.
Is this the one where James Vanderbeek cries? I think that's the last episode, actually.
No, no.
That's every episode.
Okay. But I'm sure one of you listening was here for Friends, the 100th. Is this the 100th episode?
Mm-hmm.
Is the syndication money?
It's also known as the one with the triplets. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a big deal in Friends lore, just because this is really the episode where Chandler and Monica kind of cement the fact that they're going to be a couple.
Okay.
And I kind of see them as...
That's like 100 episodes?
Yeah.
Huh.
I thought it happened later on, but apparently
I'm just,
not.
Yeah, it was. I remembered a status quo, but I guess it wasn't.
Well, they hook up at Ross's wedding, which we talked about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, will we or won't we? And then they just kind of decide in this episode that they will, but they're just not out yet to all the other friends.
Okay.
But this is also, more importantly, well, equally as important, the one where Phoebe has her brother's triplets. So she has a half-brother who she meets earlier on, and he and his wife, who is much older than him, want to have kids. And so they make embryos and put them inside Phoebe with her consent. And it ends up being triplets. And it's a really sweet storyline. And unfortunately, like most of the kids in the Friends universe, you see them and then they go away forever. So we don't really hear much about them later on. They show up in a couple other episodes. But it's really sweet. And so I pulled a clip from just a sweet moment right after she has the babies. And it's just her talking to them before she gives them to their parents.
So here you are. Seems like yesterday I was talking to you in that little petri dish. Everyone said labor was the hardest thing I'd ever have to do, but they were wrong. This is. Well, I had the most fun with you guys. And I wish I could take you home and see you every day. But... Okay, I'll settle for being your favorite aunt. I know Alice's sister has a pool, but you lived in me.
Cute.
Yeah, I mean, Lisa Kudrow deserves all the awards. She's so good.
I don't know fuck about Friends, but that other what was that show she had on HBO?
The Comeback.
That show is fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. I love her on that show.
And, you know, Friends, for being a show about six kind of self-centered white people hanging out in New York, they do a lot of interesting stuff about family because they have a lot of different kinds of families that they represent over the course of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think they have interesting things to say about it sometimes. So, I don't know. I really like this episode. And it's kind of a big deal for Friends heads.
Friends heads. Mm-hmm. I've not heard that before.
I just made it up.
Friends of Friends?
There's probably a better name, but I'm going with Friends heads.
I think Friends of Friends is where you want to go.
Probably. Kind of a big book in 1998 also. Ooh. The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver. So this book is kind of the Jerry Maguire VHS of used bookstores. Everyone you go into will have at least a couple copies of the Poisonwood Bible. And it's really a thick book. It's definitely kind of, I use this word a lot, but sprawling in a sense. But it's excellent. It was one of the first Oprah's Book Club books. And it's basically a missionary takes his family, his four daughters and his wife, to Belgian Congo during the 60s. And they kind of live in this village and try to adapt to life there while also fulfilling a mission. And it follows the girls as they're growing up. And each chapter is narrated, or each section, they each get a section that they get to narrate. And it's really, really great. It took me a while to decide to read it because I was like, oh, I see this everywhere. How good could it be? Because I'm a jerk. Guess what? It's great. And Barbara Kingsolver, she's very prolific. But this is really the one that she's known for the best.
I mean, the perspectives had me, but a name like Kingsolver, that's very Game of Thrones. Where are you going, Kingsolver? Oh, you're welcome. Solve the king. Anyway, that is no way to transition into the only game where of note, Extreme G2, the story of the most extreme G in all the hood. No, it's a bike game. if you enjoyed futuristic racing games like Wipeout or F-Zero, here's one with like Tronny motorbikes, but with loops. So at the time, I believe you heard Brett say last week, it lacked the 60 frame a second, but it had these thrills you hadn't seen in any racing game up to that point. It was a series that ran three games, and I love the first two. I really did. Power-ups, loop-de-loops, futuristic techno music in the early days of that. But Extreme G2 is out. But we have to leave you. Mm. We have to leave you 1998. Goodbye. And there's no better way to leave 1998 with fucking cake, which got me to start like stop listening to Pandora. I don't know what it is about the algorithm where everywhere I went, like, what is it about my They Might Be Giants Clash Arcade Fire Station that, like, why does cake keep coming up? Why? It doesn't relate to any of these. It's just
I don't know, but if you're afraid to sing at karaoke,
yes!
Yeah. Do a cake song.
A little talk singing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Long skirt, short jacket. No.
Short jacket.
Yep, so good.
Unless you want to get ballsy and sing Frank Sinatra, which is kind of the only song of theirs I like. But this is Never There. You know this song. Listen to it real close and don't go away because we'll be back in 2008, people.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the LaserTime crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/LaserTime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the LaserTime network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
Yeah, so I would take the cup they gave me and like just do it wherever, whenever. I think maybe in the morning. I can't remember, really.
I come and in, I'm like, I had to use this big goal.
Yeah.
But I
would put it in like a paper bag.
Sorry, just now it's time for me to gag.
But like we have like a shit ton from having a child, like a shit ton of like paper bag lunch bags, and so I just put it in that.
Child, we had a
shit. Did you write on top of it, shit ton of cum? Don't
no,
open.
No, no, you're
do not eat.
You're interrupting this great part of the story. You're interrupting this great part of the story. So I put it in a paper bag just to like not feel like an asshole, and like multiple times I'd bring it up to the front desk. I'm like, yes, I have a sample for Dr. Crawford, and the lady was like, is it urine or the other? And so, like, what would cause me to do is, like, I would glance around and I would just be like, the other.
I would have gone, like, it's a bit of a cum.
So let's just say I was coming here this morning.
It's the other animal style.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly, uncensored, and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday, starting for just $5 on patreon.com/lasertime.
Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of October 5th through 11th, it's an embarrassment of riches. Yes, it's Lassie Come Home week, everyone. That's all I have to talk about. We're going to talk for 20 minutes about Lassie Come Home. It's got Donald Crisp and Dame May Whitty in it. No. And little Roddy McDowell. Anyway, that was 75 years ago if you really care about Lassie Come Home, because I've heard it's fine. I really want to talk about, starting with 50 years ago this week, a couple movies that I'll just mention. I don't know if I'm necessarily making them the recommendation for the week, but I'd like to mention from 1968, 50 years ago, this week we have I Love You, Alice B. Toklas, starring Peter Sellers and Lee Taylor Young, which is a fun sort of look at hippie culture, a square dude getting into hippie culture. There's the Franco Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet, which was the Romeo and Juliet they made us all watch on TV, on the Roland TV in school before we had the DiCaprio-Claire Danes one. It's very accurate. It's got a good fight scene in it. But the one I really want to talk about is 40 years ago this week. First of all, Drunken Master, 1978. Love that. It took forever for the U.S. to get the Drunken Master movies. Also, Ingmar Bergman's Autumn Sonata, which just is only exists to confuse you because it's directed by Ingmar Bergman and it stars Ingrid Bergman. But the movie I have to recommend this week, 40 years ago this week, 1978, saw the release of Days of Heaven. Days of Heaven was a movie I put off watching for a long time because it's a Terrence Malick movie and I thought it's going to be slow and meaningful and beautiful, but boring. And I was so wrong. I was so wrong. Richard Gere is in it, Sam Shepard, a bunch of other folks, and it's about these sort of itinerant farm laborers. Everything I say about it is going to make it sound like it sucks, but it's about itinerant farm laborers. This brother, this guy, his little sister and his girlfriend, as they move around doing this farm work, and they end up on this farm run by Sam Shepard, and he kind of has a thing for the girlfriend, but because it's like the 30s, being together but not married is kind of weird, and it becomes sort of a stressful situation that is one of the most beautiful movies I have ever seen. Really, just sort of, it just hit me in the chest. I really loved it. I feel like an idiot for putting it off so long. So please watch a relaxing, beautiful movie, Days of Heaven from 1978. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
In with Oasis, the Shock of Lightning off of Dig Out Your Soul. Yes, oh god, everybody remembers where they were when a new Oasis album came out.
Sure.
Maybe not so much in 2008. Stop knocking. But we also have new releases of 2008. We are in 2008, by the way, October 5th through the 11th. New releases this week: Unexpected by Michelle Williams, the actress.
No.
Oh, okay. Skeleton.
The Destiny's Child.
That's the other person's name. Okay. Skeletal Lamping by of Montreal. Break Up the Concrete by The Pretenders. Appeal to Reason by Rise Against. And Life is Not a Waiting Room by Sense Fail. Whatever You Like by T.I. is still number one, obviously. But with a little bit of news from 2008. yes, it's another internet meme. Diana, what is this?
It is the 10th anniversary of the Velociraptor.
I love the Velociraptor.
I love Velociraptor, and I love when I can give someone credit. It was created by an illustrator named Sam Smith, which doesn't give him a lot of credit because that's kind of a generic name, dude.
Yeah.
But I love Velociraptor. He's thinking. He has deep thoughts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I like deep Keanu Reeves a little more, but okay, I'll allow it. Yeah, but that's 2008, the internet in a nutshell, because, man, you're not gonna like the movies much more than that, because it's an unfair world where Beverly Hills Chihuahua is number one at the box office, again. And the other movies, like, man, holy shit, I hate all these.
Yeah.
Oh, we get two that are passable. Let's start with The Express, which unfortunately was a box office failure, even though it got really solid reviews. But it looks like it combines sports movie tropes with biopic tropes because it's about Ernie Davis, who's the first African-American football player to win the Heisman Trophy.
You mean so, white people used to win the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I know. Right. Weird. Well, you know, it's because they're genetically better at the physical labor than white people. Because we can spin anything into racism.
I've never heard of this.
So it's all about, you know, he's not. Yeah, people being assholes. What do you want?
Yeah, I want to hear some of that trailer.
In a time of change.
This is not just a game. We're fighting something else out on that field right now.
One man had the courage.
I can't even walk in the front door of a hotel. Now all those people who believe that's right are watching. But you know what? So are they.
To achieve.
achieve the extraordinary.
Winning this one means nothing if you lose yourselves. Don't you let anyone steal history away from you.
The Express.
Football.
Choo-choo. That's all I know about it.
I kind of feel like football is to Dennis Quaid as baseball is to Kevin Costner.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Because he's got Everybody's All-American, which is another football movie.
Yeah. And even like another more recent one that I don't remember. But
I feel like there's another one out there floating around with him, too.
Yeah. When I picture Dennis Quaid, he either is in a coach's hat or football pads. So, yeah. And I picture him quite a bit. Helps me go to sleep, if you know what I'm saying. man, Dexter fans, there is life after the show because Jennifer Carpenter is starring in a horror movie. I feel like I saw Quarantine, also starring Steve Harris and Jay Hernandez.
Over the years,
nobody's found.
There have been numerous strange occurrences.
No explanation.
The government has kept hidden from us.
We're in Los Angeles with a fire department.
But one of them.
Tape everything, you hear me? Tape everything.
Was recorded on film.
They won't let us out.
Everyone's been evacuated.
They're gonna let us die.
What the hell's going on?
I am not authorized to tell you.
Rated R, October 10th.
I did not see this.
Did not see that either.
Yeah, so the last shot of the trailer and the poster are the end of the movie.
Okay. I figured as much. I don't know how you come back from that.
Jennifer Garfin being dragged off into the dark?
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, I remember hearing people being pissed off like, wait, what the fuck? They're giving it away. So I went and looked and yeah, that is the end of the movie. It's the last shot of the movie. Wow.
Cool. Cool move.
Yeah.
I guess they were just like, this is the coolest shot in the movie. This is our only shot of getting people to watch it. Everyone hates her character on Dexter. Let's just do this.
Damn it. I liked her.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She ruined the show, man. Fucking Yoko.
I wasn't a huge fan.
That show's awful. Show is
well,
awful.
Well, it became awful.
Yes, very much so.
It was pretty
so.
Good, and then it became...
And didn't Dexter marry his sister and then they couldn't be then they divorced and they couldn't be on screen together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she nursed him through cancer in real life and then
whew.
I don't know. Strong, that's hearsay.
No, I don't need you
not
anymore.
Sure.
But this movie I'm glad we get to bring up because I was talking with someone and we couldn't remember what fucking movie
it
was.
That's the worst. I hate that.
And because we were obsessed with this had a great trailer in a time before comic book movies, you got Harry Potter, but like no other like big fantasy films.
This we need to do like a multi-part series on trying to be the next Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because this has the next Harry Potter written all over it.
Yeah,
City of Ember,
but like is this the first Saoirse Ronan joint? I don't remember.
Well, no, this is her first big popular joint after Atonement.
Yeah,
okay.
Being an Oscar nomination because she's amazing.
Oh, see, that's why Diana's here.
You guys should have all watched Atonement by now.
I did not do it.
I seen
God
it.
God damn it.
Never
I
do my
it.
Homework. Sarah watched it. We're covered.
I saw that.
We're covered. Also starring Tim Robbins and Bill Murray is the president of an underground steampunk city. It feels like if I say that, you think I'm lying, but this happened and this movie looks gorgeous. And I remember we all went to go see it day one and it did nothing for us and it just sort of went away. But it was like this huge, ambitious movie. I remember the internet being so excited over and then we all just forgot it happened.
The generator's broke. Can't be fixed. Without it, we won't survive.
I have to find a way out of here.
It. Maybe there's a way out of Ember. Keep your eyes peeled. Look around every corner. You never know where you might find a clue.
It's too dangerous.
There's a way out. I have proof.
Show me.
We stand united against the darkness.
Woo, Bill! This is crazy. It's giving me really weird memories. Everyone,
me too.
And if you were a game rar, it looked like, well, A, City of Lost Children, and B, like the Bioshock movie you always wanted, the underwater utopia that's corroding on it, like corrupting itself, and that people want to escape from. And this totally went away. I've never heard anybody talk about this film since. City of Ember.
Is it based on a...
It is, yeah.
YA book?
Yeah, I think there was supposed to be a second movie called, like, The People of Sparks.
Series.
Gotcha.
There's a series.
Yeah, there was a series, and it didn't take, but it looked amazing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And still sort of does. Those are some huge sets.
Yeah. Yeah, but now it just looks like, oh, it's the Maze Runner or whatever. You know, like, it kind of looks the same. I don't know. It looks like how it wishes... It feels like it wishes it was Hellboy, the set. It just doesn't look quite good enough, you know?
No, too many pipes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have also this... I'm guessing this is the movie you thought was worthwhile, Diana. The Duchess.
I do think this is worthwhile, and the trailer is not going to sell you on it.
Yep, that's true.
But I will explain myself.
You had me at Ralph Fiennes and Keira Knightley, The Duchess.
One has to accept one's responsibility and settle down to the task at hand, providing the Duke with a son.
Do you think of me when we're not together?
Of you more than anything else. This is a dangerous path to choose, my girl.
All my life, I've been fighting my way upstream.
I love you in the way I understand love.
You can't...
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Ooh. This is not selling this movie well.
I know. We call this kind of trailer Kryptonite.
It is actually about the historical Duchess of Devonshire, who is an ancestor Princess Diana. And they actually end up having a lot in common.
Really?
In that she is, you know, sold off in a loveless marriage to super boring guy Ralph Fiennes. But she sort of flourishes in the world of politics, but she's a woman, so she can only go so far. She can't really do much. She can just sort of help other people and get attention. But of course, and she falls in love with someone and she's not allowed to be with him. And it's like she's like straining against the restrictions of the society in a cool feminist way, because it's Keira Knightley and she's in costume dramas. And that's what she does every time. This is a good example.
She also is supposed to give Ralph Fiennes a boy and keeps giving him girls.
What a loser.
Because that's how science works. And it was very hard to watch this and not want to reach through the screen and slap Ralph Fiennes and be like, it's you. You're the one that makes a boy or a girl, you dumb.
Nexus, asshole.
Yeah.
Try a different position. That's what I read in this book from the turn of the century.
You got to warm up that uterus first.
Yeah.
Temperatures.
Play some basketball, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not as stuffy as this makes it sound. This makes it sound like super stuffy and boring and weepy. And it is actually a pretty fun, breezy watch that was, you know, interesting to think about feminism. Mm. This is why we have it. Yay.
As told through a series of wigs and hats.
Well, and at one point her wig does catch on fire at a fancy party.
I'm in again.
Yeah. And also, just to let anyone know who would like to know these sorts of things ahead of time, at one point, Ralph Fiennes rapes her. So
it's not just a clever name. Anyway. Apologies.
Oh, my God. If he ever gets me too'd.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Ronan Farrow, look into it. That headline writes itself. But was this movie number one? Because this is the most heavily marketed.
No, Beverly Hills Chihuahua was.
No, the next one.
Oh.
Because this was. No, The Body of Lies?
Body of Lies, heavily marketed. Big stars, big director. Nobody cares.
Nobody.
I still don't.
Nobody
cares. I actually tried to watch this. It's on Netflix, I think, or HBO now. I can't remember. And I tried to watch this for research because. Again, like just like Traitor, we talked about a couple weeks ago, like this is the kind of like international crime thriller fun times that Sam and I are usually super into. We started this two nights in a row and fell asleep and couldn't remember what happened. Had to restart it. Finally gave up on it.
I don't even remember what it's about. I know it's not Blood Diamond.
No. Nope.
I know it's not proof of life.
Proof of life.
It's called Body of Lies. I'm positive.
I have one rule. Never lie to me.
We are together in this war. And Hoffman is the head of the Near East Division, but he doesn't give you information until he steals it from the guy on the ground, and that's me.
We're partners, all right? All you gotta do is trust me.
Oops.
How do you expect me to operate?
Just trying to back you up, buddy.
What the hell else are you holding back from me?
You lied to me. I will not help you.
Body of Lies, from director Ridley Scott. Read it on.
Ridley Scott. Mm.
My question is, did someone tell Russell Crowe that this might be an Oscar nomination movie and therefore it's worth it to get that unattractive? Like, he really, like, padded on some pounds, got a terrible haircut, dyed his hair gray. Why? For this movie? This is what you're going to do?
It was a precautionary measure in the insurance clause so that he no longer broke up any marriages by sleeping with his co-stars.
Oh, is that a thing he
does? I don't know. It's in the IMDb trivia
Bringing it back to Dennis Quaid, yes. Yes, it is.
That did happen at one point, yes. No, I don't remember this at all. It does strike me as weird now, like, because, like, super adult dad bod Leonardo DiCaprio, just seeing him in a movie set in the present feels bizarre. I don't see it that often anymore. Other than the padded. But yeah, Body of Lies was kind of the, I don't know, I think Hollywood had all its chips on that movie this week and it did not pan out.
Yeah.
Good Lord. I did watch the first show we can talk about in television of 2008.
Did you watch it? I thought I was the only person who watched this.
No, because I wanted to like it because I liked the British show a little bit, but never finished it either. But it's
Oh, yeah. We got two imports in a... No, we got three imports. It's all imports.
Holy shit.
Week.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Life on Mars, because it's a pretty decent English show about what a dude who gets in a car accident and wakes up in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Wakes up in 1973.
But also as a cop.
He is also a cop, though, and it's sort of him trying to... figure out what is he doing in 1973 and how to get back to his real life while also solving mysteries, because you also got to do that. It starred Harvey Keitel, Gretchen Mol, Antista impersonator Michael Imperioli, and Jason O'Mara. I remember really liking this. Honestly, it's because I really like Michael Imperioli, and so I was like, well, I'll give this one a chance. And then the network probably couldn't really figure out what they were going to do with it. After the first couple episodes, it got a little bit of a retooling in order to make it more comprehensible
for people. It's based on a British show that has a finite shelf life in a couple of episodes. And from what I've read, the ending is amazing, whereas if the first season got renewed, it would have had more episodes than the British show ever did, making all that pretty meaningless. They have to spin their wheels in the 1970s for as long as possible. But you never know, because sometimes an import works out, as we'll see in a moment. And Kath and Kim.
Yeah, this was an Australian import, starring Molly Shannon and Selma Blair as like a mother-daughter team. Just kind of two ditzy ladies trying to make it in the world.
It's weird because they didn't look like they were different ages at all.
Yeah. They're a little too close in age for it to feel real.
Because I watched this because I somehow, I had a British boss, and one of the first things I did in 07 was help his wife pirate episodes of Kath and Kim. So I watched them, this isn't bad. And this show came out, I'll give it a shot, and bounced immediately.
It's got John Michael Higgins, who's always a treasure as well. But yeah, unfortunately, didn't do well. These two women, I think, obviously are good at comedy and can do comedy. This show just did not serve them well, unfortunately.
Not for more than a season.
Yeah. But we also have the end episode of The Office, which I picked because I love this episode called Business Ethics.
I probably watch more Office every week than almost any show on television.
I mean, it's on Comedy Central all the time. I really appreciate it when I travel and I could just throw on any TV in the hotel. Yeah, it's always on. But yeah, Business Ethics is a really a real fun one.
I promise you that you are not going to get into trouble. You can say anything you want with total and complete immunity.
Oh, no.
Yeah, come on, anybody. Let it fly.
Okay, once in a while, I'll take a long lunch.
A siesta.
Time thief. Fire him.
Dwight, you've really never stolen any company time?
Never.
You are a thief of joy. Anybody else? Yeah.
Sometimes I download pirated music onto my work computer.
Who hasn't? Good. What else?
No, I'd like to hear more about that.
I once reported Oscar to the INS. Turns out he's clean, and I'm glad I did it.
Well, let's keep this party moving on.
I'll go. Have you guys ever met Bruce Myers, the Scranton rep for Hammermill?
Bruce!
Well, for the past 6 years, I've been sleeping with him in exchange for discounts on our supplies and Outback Steakhouse gift certificates.
Jackpot.
That's what I remember, because you think that's going to be just a throwaway line. It turns out to be... Was that the subject of the rest of the episode?
Yeah, it's the whole episode.
You can't keep fucking this guy for discounts.
Oh, man. It's also great, too, when you rewatch these Office episodes and realize this is where all these gifts come from. You are a thief of joy. And also, the cold open on this one is when Jim and Pam finally announce their engagement. And Michael tackles Jim with a giant hug. That's a huge gif that I see everywhere as well. But my favorite is at the end of this episode where everyone's eating Outback takeout and they all agree they wish Meredith would keep sleeping with the guy for free steak.
Oh, The Office. I did not expect that show to hold up so well. Then maybe just TV is bad from here on out. I don't know.
Well, this certainly is. The Macy's Passport Celebrity Catwalk Challenge. Yeah. Wherein NBC TV celebrities accepted a challenge, because this is a challenge, to be a runway model in a fashion show to raise money and awareness for HIV and AIDS causes. This is
too bad, because I didn't watch it, and now I'm not aware of AIDS and HIV.
But I pulled a little short, very, very 2008 clip.
A half dozen celebrities and one very long fashion runway. Macy's Passport Celebrity Catwalk Challenge. From Deal or No Deal, Layla Milani.
Today I want you to meet your celebrity model,
Layla
Milani, from Deal or No Deal.
Yeah?
We know each other from way back. She's amazing. You can't go wrong tonight with her, because she's going to wear everything fabulous.
Oh. There she goes. Ew. Attitude, great walk, perfect hip movement, arms are fine.
Ew. I always wanted to do runway modeling, but unfortunately I'm not 5'9 and above, but I definitely admire professional runway models.
You're awful.
Ooh, and so
the prettiest lady ever.
So they have a model who's like a professional model already.
Yes.
Who opens
doing
briefcases?
A different kind of model.
On yes. Deal or No Deal.
And also,
to be judged by Jerry Springer?
He was one of the judges. And I also want to note that they didn't say his name, but the designer that she was walking for was Christian Audige of Ed Hardy.
Ed Hardy? and hosted by Tori Spelling?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It is super gross.
My God. I will only watch this if that runway is on fire.
I've never seen a long list of such talentless talent.
Mm-hmm. And also Meredith from The Office is one of the models.
Oh, and I'm taking it all back. Yeah. I'd love to see anything she does.
She's actually great. But.
And that is television in a nutshell, baby.
Yeah.
For 2008. But Sarah's got a fucking fiction. You like fiction books?
I do. Actually... We can actually skip this one, because I don't have much to say about it, so we can just skip it.
Well, skipping the books, which was the story of Edgar Sawtell?
Sawtell?
Yeah, we get to go into the games, because I mentioned this on Video Game Apocalypse last week, because one of our guests was Chris Baker, who used to work at LucasArts, the now post-Disney buyout developer in San Francisco that George Lucas owned. They made a bunch of great things beyond Star Wars games, and later in their life that sort of killed them, such as the game Fracture, a very expensive like a first-person shooter about moving terrain set in San Francisco that for some reason I still have in the shrink wrap to this day. Legend of Kage 2, a fucking game I really, 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 really liked on the NES by Taito, finally gets a sequel, and I loved it, but nobody cares about this series. But it was just, you were this ninja who could jump and climb trees, I would say like 100 times your height in the side-scroller, whereas a lot of side-scrollers, you didn't really move that high. I loved it. NBA Live 09 as well as 2K9 are out this week, and Guilty Gear 2 Overture. And that is it for the games. And that is it for the show, people. We used to rattle off comments here, but you guys unlocked it, and now it's its own show. We have that over on patreon.com/lasertime. Please enjoy that, as well as, I think, the funniest video clip we've ever played for ourselves. Too bad it wasn't on the regular show.
Oh, yeah.
I almost died. I think I'm going to try and make him the image of the whole show. I love that face Robert De Niro makes.
Awesome.
thank you, everybody, for that, who supports us at patreon.com/lasertime. You're being rewarded this time of year with more commentaries than ever, as well as a brand new show, An Elm Street Nightmare, hosted by me and Dave Rudden. That's all about Jason Voorhees and the Friday the 13th series. We'll be talking about the first 10 movies. And that's set. And it's just starting to get real good in the place that we're recording. So please enjoy that. Or if you're not a patron, you can enjoy the first season for free wherever you listen to podcasts. That's all about the Freddy Krueger films. If you really want to see that Freddy's Nightmare episode, my buddy Lizzie, the original co-host of Elm Street Nightmare, who's taking a sabbatical to get married, you can watch that on patreon.com/lasertime as well. All for the price of a cup of coffee every month, and it'll help us do great things and continue to make shows that you like, hopefully. Thank you, guys. Anyway.
Cool. And you can find me on Twitter at ListeningNerd, LECINENERD, or plugging stuff for the show at 302010podcast, 302010 podcast on Twitter, hinting what's coming up and letting you know if you got, fun stories or whatever. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You can let us know about your stories and stuff.
Indeed. Love doing that. And check us out there. And yeah, maybe we'll have some more game stuff over on LaserTimePodcast.com. We encourage you to listen to LaserTime this week about technology in horror, a mixture that worked really well early on and less so as we moved into the future.
Mm-hmm.
But really, a really interesting topic. We'll have mostly Halloween-y topics throughout the month of October. But definitely stuff, even if you're not into horror, that you can hang with. Trust me. A bunch of fun stuff planned. And also look out for Video Game Apocalypse, because the video game releases, new releases, are really heating up, like, big time.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to play games at this point because there are too many. And Red Dead Redemption 2 isn't even out yet. But that's we'll talk about it at length with a bunch of Harden fans, including Mr. Diana Goodman, Mike Roparez, who I believe likes Red Dead Redemption a lot.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Very much.
But yes, look forward to that every Friday. Anyway, that brings us to the ends of our shows. Diana, you got to tell us who died within this time period, October 5th through 11th.
Well, in 2008, we only have one. Neil Hefti, composer Neil Hefti, died.
Hefty,
he was
Hefty.
85.
Oh.
If you know his work, even if you don't know his work, he wrote the themes for The Odd Couple and the Batman 66 TV show.
What? Oh, I love that. Wow. Fucking, I love both of those themes.
Yep. And Batman is especially useful because if you want to know what the chord progression is for 12-bar blues, it's just the Batman theme.
Oh.
Yeah, Batman. Yeah, that part.
I love it. Goddamn, I have that on vinyl, like actually from the 60s.
Nice.
I love it.
Should we do birthdays?
We got to do birthdays.
Oh, birthdays.
Oh, we got two great birthdays, okay? We got birthday buddies, two guys who were born same day, same year. Not the same city, unfortunately, but they're both turning 75, so I wanted to do both of them.
Okay.
You ready? So, first one, born October 8th, 1943, in New York City to a prominent family. His mother's family came to New York in 1624.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Right on time.
Right. He went to a series of fancy boarding schools, which he tended to flunk out of, and he avoided the draft by claiming to be gay.
Whoa. Oh. How progressive.
Yep.
And unpatriotic.
A lot of people did that at the time. Sometimes they made you prove it.
Oh, ooh. Sweet.
Yeah. But after that, he joined what he said was a bad jazz band with Walter Becker and Donald Fagen. Everyone my dad's age knows this now.
Wait, I know this too, because I just heard him talk about it for some reason. Chevy Chase?
It is Chevy Chase.
Yeah, he's the original member of Steely Dan before they had the name Steely Dan.
Wow.
I had no idea until
I did not know this.
A recent Hollywood Reporter profile called, "Why are you such an asshole?" Now you know why.
But he shares a birthday with someone. This guy, I looking into him, I love it so much.
The same age?
Also born October 8th, 1943.
Wow, okay.
Happy 75th birthday again to this guy born in Columbus, Ohio. Started writing at age 9. Since then, he's sold around 400 million books, about on par with Stephen King.
What? Ooh,
Dean Kuntz?
Nope. After college, he wrote for Bananas Magazine and co-created Nickelodeon's Eureka's Castle.
What the fuck?
What?
I should know this.
Yep.
My Castle Music Box.
Yeah. And then also some of his books he wrote were the novelizations of Ghostbusters 2 and Spaceballs.
What the? Oh, I'm never going to get this.
I think you might, because here's some of his books. I picked out the ones that I like the titles of the best.
Okay.
Steve Allen. No.
No. Night of the Living Dummy. Trick or Trapped. Piano Lessons Can Be Murder.
Oh,
See Cheese and Die.
R.L.
Again,
Stein?
It's R.L. Stein.
Yay!
Really? All right.
Yep. Goosebumps.
All right, now Sarah and I are tied.
Exactly. Oh. He's credited on more than 300 books.
Wow.
That makes sense.
Including a new Jack Black movie. Jesus. Jesus.
Yep.
Okay. Is he still with us?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, he is. Still writing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is 30-20-10. We hope you enjoyed that. I hope you did better on the birthday quiz than I did. I got one. But we'll take us out with Love Lockdown by Kanye West. Why is that? Because he made an ass of himself on SNL?
It's on the charts this week in 2008. And yes, he made an ass of himself.
That has been 30-20-10. We will close out with Kanye West, of course.
Yay.
But yeah, check us out at lasertimepodcast.com. And hey, tell a friend about the show. We would really appreciate that. All right, people. Until next week. So keep your love.
So I keep it true. I got something to